We love hip hop.
You know what we were talking about before, with content.
Yeah.
And how things are changing now.
Yes.
Like, you're right. Like, it is a great time with all this Drake stuff coming out.
Mm.
Even with you as a DJ, how does that affect you? Are you playing any of this stuff?
Yeah, of course. Of course you have to, right? And you have to kind of show that, you know, you have to play both sides. You know, like, at least to me, I want to play both sides. I mean, I guess pending where I'm at, because sometimes you play the wrong side and the wrong person's in the room, you can get checked. And that's happened to me and to like a few other DJs. But you know what? I think it's good because you have to educate the crowd and you have to kind of play, you know what? This is like the Kendrick, but you know what? Let's, you know, let's play Drake's new version. And then now he just dropped that Taylor.
The Taylor made freestyle. But yeah, wait a minute. When like that came out, because salute to DJ Czar, right? One of my co-hosts.
Mm-hmm.
And we call him DJ Pick and Choose because he was like, I'm not playing that Kendrick song anywhere in Toronto. You know, I'm staying loyal to OVO. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Can a DJ, you just say you played like that, so you're cool with it.
But yeah, I'm cool with it. But I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a big Drake fan too. Like, mm-hmm. don't get it twisted. I love Drake. I love OVO. You know, shot the whole camp. But end of the day, I think, you know what? I'm not paid by the camp. I'm not with the camp, and you know, shout out to them. And you know, like, I got love for them, but at the same time too, the song is a banger. And I'm sure even OVO guys will admit, whether they want to or not, like that, like that is a slapper. Like, the beat's fire. And Kendrick's verse, you know, it was cool. It was cool, and it's noteworthy. So it's something to me as like a DJ that I should play for the crowd, you know. And it's something that end of the day people want. If people don't want to hear it, then obviously I'm not gonna play it. But if it's a song that people are, you know, they like want, and end of the day, when you're DJing at a club, you know, you have to play for the people who are spending money at the bar, aka, you know, whoever's gonna buy like the most bottles. And mm-hmm. if they want to hear that song, you gotta play it.
Yeah.
So it just kind of, you know, comes back to that. But at the same time, I'm like gonna play Drake's you know, Drake's version, and you know,
you gotta play a medley of Drake right after you play like that.
Trust me, I'm doing that. I have that all on deck, you know.
No 100%. Friends in the industry, back to back,
everything, you know. Started from the bottom, whatever, you know.
So, okay, and just one more nerd out question when it's gonna come to that, right? Sure. Because I'm not a DJ, I play one on podcast, right?
Yeah,
but like when you're playing this song, right? Mm-hmm. The future verse obviously is cool, right?
Yeah.
Are you cutting it like right to the Kendrick bar? Yeah,
That's what I've been doing. I'll play maybe like the first four or five, like the maybe like first 4 to 8 bars of the future part, and go straight to Kendrick. Cut straight to like Kendrick, have like a cue point set up in thing Serato, and go straight to Kendrick's part. You know, because end of the day, people have short. You know, like people don't like to listen to a full song as it is in general.
Facts.
And especially when you're at a club, you want to hear just like the best parts of the song,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, unless it's like a super massive hit, you know. And for that song, you have to play Kendrick's verse and then you're out.
Mix it out to the next one.
Quick. You know?
And people are in there. Oh,
exactly. Oh, that happens all the time. I have like ADD when I DJ as it is. So many times people are like, man, like you mix too fast. You're like playing it too fast. I'm like, sorry, you know, I just have like I don't know.
You're juggling, bro.
I'm juggling, you know. I'm just going in, you know. So that's it.
Oh man. Well, listen, man. Let's start this up, because like for the audio listeners, they don't see who's on the screen. But you know, I want to just like talk shop today. Like as a man who's over the years in this hip hop game as a rapper, I've always found myself hanging out with DJs. Mm-hmm. So I understand the DJ's struggle, the successes, and different things like that. So just y'all around demeanor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking 100%,
about, right? 100%. I know exactly what you're saying.
Because the DJ, like a lot of people,
we're like weirdos in a sense. Yeah, I'll admit, you know, like a lot of us move weird sometimes.
Not weirdos, because weirdo is like relative, like to what people think is weird or not.
Yeah, correct.
But like, there's some DJs who are like very outgoing, like a Kid Capri or something like that. But DJs have always been the cool person in the room, the chill person, the person you could actually confide in more times too. You know
a lot
what I'm
of
saying?
Times, yeah.
Where the rapper is the more arrogant, outside. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You have to be like the person, like the standout person in the room is like the rapper or singer or whoever. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, so, 100%.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I'm really excited to have this conversation with a gentleman that I've known for a multitude of years. I feel like I've known you before doing a podcast.
Because I remember you from the Empire days. From the Empire days, and actually from like Real Toronto DVD, obviously, as you know, many people know. That's when I kind of first heard of you. And then after actually I bought that DVD, I actually started to listen to Empire and stuff, because I think that's around the time there was Project Bounce.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of got I actually heard about you, but then I kind of like would see you outside, you know, back in those days, you mm-hmm, know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, dope to see even your evolution as a person, right? So it's dope.
Oh, salute. So yeah, man, with no further ado, we have the DJ who you might see if you're over there in B-Town for the Raptors 905 game, or you might see him at the ACC for the Raptors game. You know what I'm saying? I seen that.
Yeah. It was like a special guest appearance. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Shout out to Raptors for that.
So with no further ado, we have DJ Andre 905 in the motherfucking building.
Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming through, bro.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I want to just be able to chop it up with you and find out a few things about like the whole DJing game and stuff like that. Can you break down to the people like even like what you do currently with the Raptors 905?
Yeah. So the Raptors 905, they are the farm team for the actual Raptors, mm-hmm. which means basically they're the minor league where they have lots of players that say, for example, can't play in the NBA because there's only 10 spots on a team, 10 total spots. So they actually get to play in the in this league called the G League. And so they can actually work on their skills, develop themselves. So then that way, if they get called up to the NBA, they're all set and they're not kind of rusty because they haven't had any game action.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I'm the team DJ for the Raptors 905. And then I've also done some stuff with the actual Raptors as well.
Okay.
So it's been dope, and it's been like a blessing to DJ for the team. So pretty much like during the games, that kind of like entails me playing songs during timeouts, but also I get to play warm up for when the players come out, even like before like the fans show up, and then I'll play for like the fans, you know, for like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Before the actual game starts. And then during the game, I'm just kind of playing in between any breaks and such.
And then
halftime and such.
As a Toronto-centric network, right? We're over here. And, you know, we have a big local scene.
Correct.
Are you able to slide in a couple of local songs?
Of course, yeah. I've been doing it all the time. Since I've been their team DJ since 2015, I've been playing guys from the city. Guys and girls from the city and the country. You know what? If the music's dope, 100%. Like, you know what? Like, I don't care. I don't take sides. I'm not involved in any politics, no nonsense. Like, mm-hmm. to me, if I rock with you as an artist, I rock with you as an artist. I don't care what area you're from, what your gender is, what your background is. I don't really care. If it's good, it's good. I'm going to play it. But at the same time, too, I also look at it as like, do you have motion behind your name, too, mm-hmm. right? Say, for example, because sometimes there are some songs that I may not personally like, but I know, okay, the crowd will like, or people will know.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm going to play your song at the game because it has legs behind it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it makes sense for me to play the song.
Yeah. Even with the song selection, right? Mm-hmm. Are you getting to pick the song that you play, or is it like based on like a playlist that's pre-selected, or are you going on like what's popping basically?
Yeah. So I'm able to play what I want during warm-up, before the game, halftime, mm-hmm. after the game. During the game, for the actual timeouts, that's kind of pre-planned by the actual Raptors 905 game operations team. So they'll kind of pick, you know, like the songs to play for like the dancers, or to play for, say they have like a hit with, say for example, TD Bank.
Mm-hmm.
They have like a song that's going to be just for that hit. So it's actually like a full-out like TV production kind of show in the sense that, you know, because say for example Coca-Cola has like this sponsor, so they're gonna do like a Coca-Cola segment, and they'll have a song kind of themed to that segment.
Mm-hmm. So like for example, like they picked basically what they want the segment to look like.
Yes.
They've already put the sound design together, like as far as like they want this song or this beat to be playing.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So they need to make sure that you stick to the script. That
yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, because I have an actual script. I have an actual script.
Yeah, yeah.
I have an actual script that I have to follow and say, okay, for example, first quarter timeout, I have to play this song, you know, for this period. And then after that, switch to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, it's like you have to kind of stick to like a script for certain points of the game. But like outside of that, like halftime and so, and like sometimes if there are injury timeouts, I have like the leeway to play what I want. As long as it's family friendly and clean edited.
Yes.
That's why I tell artists, send me clean edits of your songs. I can't play for some, you know, kids, you know, swear words and things of that nature, right?
Yeah.
So you have to keep it family friendly.
What about the drill?
Yeah. So I still play drill and stuff, but I just tell them, just edit it. And sometimes I'll have to re-edit the songs because sometimes some of these engineers, I have, you know, love for all of y'all, but some of y'all, you leaving words like shit and, you know,
shit's not so bad.
Like bitch and ho and battery thing. It's like, I have to like certain songs I have to really listen to and re-edit because there's been times where I played a song and I thought it was clean because someone sent it to me and I didn't listen and I didn't do my due diligence to listen in advance and I played it and all you hear is an N word or a B word and you're just like, oh man, you're cringing and I'm praying no one's
paying attention. That's the hook. It's going to come back again.
It's going to come back again. You got to make it sound quick, you know? So, yeah, 100%.
Oh man. How was it doing the Raptors, the game?
So that was for South Asian night. So for the Raptors, what they did is they wanted to book like a bunch of South Asian talent for that night. So they asked me to be the guest DJ for like the first half of the game. Also like the first hour of the doors opening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like I was able to like play for like the first maybe I guess 45 minutes to like an hour. And it was just, they were just like, you know what, play what you want, but try to throw in some South Asian songs because it is South Asian Heritage Night.
Yeah, yeah,
so I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, no problem. I'm going to throw in some AP Dylan and Sidhu Mooswala and, you know, artists of that nature.
Yeah, man, because I even see with you, bro, like one thing I notice, even in my emails, I get emails from you, DJ Andre 905.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's a well-written email. Are artists sending you stuff to send out or are you working with artists as well? Like,
yeah, so both. So a lot of times camps will hit me up and they'll be like, hey, you know what? I need this out. And like I work with all artists from and like if you've got my emails, you've seen from pretty much every area of the city.
Mm-hmm.
I've done work with tons of artists. Yeah. And like what I'll do is I'll just send out their records to other DJs, people in the, you know, in the game like yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'll send out like a full DJ pack with like the clean version, dirty version, and like a small write up on the record and the links to like their social media and such, just to kind of get their records out to other DJs, right? Because I think that's important because so many times we have so many great artists in the city, but their songs stay on SoundCloud or YouTube or Apple Music and it's not getting to the DJ. And I feel like I can kind of help in that way. That I can get your music to the other DJs, you know, whether they play it, it's on them.
Yeah.
And you know, but at least I can try to, at least my goal is I can at least get the records to them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so many times, and like, you'd be surprised how many big DJs, not even from Canada, but from outside Canada in the States that even hit me up till this day, be like, oh, can you send me this new record from Pressa or this new record from Doobie or this new Pyrex record? So it's like dope that way.
I would imagine you're probably like the link to a lot of American and international DJs when it comes to like tapping into Canadian music.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what? You'd be surprised because even sometimes they'll come down and they'll hit up other DJ friends of mine and then they'll just kind of forward my information to them and be like, mm-hmm. Hey, I heard you're tapped in with like the like local scene. Who should I play? Who should I not play? What works? What doesn't work? And you know, and I'll always tell them, I'll be like, hey, I'll be like, these are like the songs that I know work. And I'm like, but I tell them like, just definitely be careful because in Toronto, we do not play. And unfortunately, sometimes you can play certain songs that can upset people. And if those people are in the crowd, you know, you can get attacked.
Yeah.
And that has happened. To other DJs.
You know, I want to touch on that. Definitely.
Yeah.
I want to go through a history, but there was one thing I forgot to do before I even started. I forgot to salute my sponsors. You know what I'm saying? So let me do that quick, fast, you know, because we got to make sure that we always keep the sponsors well saluted, you know what I'm saying? Big Salute to Diamond Club. Okay, that's the sign that you see right behind me over here. If you need some of that piffity piff or edibles, pens, any type of 420 needs, hit them up on their Instagram page, DiamondClub_Canada, or you can find them on the 7 Days of Weed website. Use the code WeLoveHipHop and you'll receive a discount on anything on the menu. You know what I mean? Also, if you need to get some of that grabba, there's some grabba packs up there on the wall, courtesy of Steaming Hot Grabba. And they got all different types of grabba flavors. Okay, red rose grabba, red herring grabba, all that good stuff. All right, hit them up on their Instagram page, Steaming Hot Grabba. Use the code WeLoveHipHop and get a code on get the discount on your order. And yeah, delivery all over the GTA. All right. Yeah, big salute to the sponsors. So let's get back into this quick fast here, because I feel like I'm all over the place today, but
That's okay.
It's just, like I said, more of a conversation than a straight interview.
Correct.
But you came down here from Saga today, right?
Yes, sir.
Is that where you grew up too?
Yeah. So I was actually born in Saudi Arabia. So my parents are from India, but I was born in Saudi Arabia. And then I moved to Mississauga when I was like 9 years old.
Okay.
And I've been there ever since.
What was the life like when you first moved out there? Was it still farmland type shit over there?
It was still farmland. Yeah, it was still farmland. And it wasn't as diverse. Like, there was like some diversity, but it wasn't as diverse as it is obviously now. But yeah, man, like it was like a different time. Obviously, growing up in those days where, you know, where you had to be outside, there was all the social media and things of that nature and stuff. And like even musically, in those days, you had to listen to like radio or you had to watch TV, like Much Music or BET to kind of know what know what's actual popping.
Yeah, like musically. early '90s.
Early '90s, correct.
Yeah,
correct.
So, you know, before even getting into hip hop and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as a South Asian, as a South Asian kid at the time, right? Correct. So was it you and like family, you and like, did you have like a crew of like other South Asian cats, like other Indian kids in different like South Asian countries and stuff like that?
Well, growing up, you mean?
Yeah.
So I mean, like in my actual household, it was just me, my mom, my dad, and sister.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I had friends, like family friends who were also South Asian and such as well. But I was lucky that I was able to actually grow up around like all types of cultures, like Filipino, Italian, Portuguese, Guyanese, Trini, so like that was dope growing up that way.
So when did the music start to like, not even the DJing, but like when did you start noticing I like hip hop?
Honestly, I'd say probably in like my high school days in like the 90s. I definitely grew up, you know, like I was growing up, like I used to listen to all types of music. Like I still like all like the dance music stuff, like Dance Mix 95, all that. And then I also liked alternative rock and stuff. Cool. But then I had a friend of mine that was like, that put me onto Tupac. And then then he was like, you know what? But if you like Pac, you'll like Nas. And then I really fell in love with it after listening to Nas. And then he's like, you know what? But like, you want to hear hard stuff? Listen to Wu-Tang. And then after that, I kind of just got hooked. And then Snoop Dogg and then Jay-Z and kind of like snowballed from there.
Yeah. So now you're listening.
Yeah.
What part of hip hop did you try to get into? Was it DJing first? Were you trying to be a rapper? Did you try anything else first?
So I tried to rap first. I wasn't good. I was horrible.
Everybody tries to rap first,
horrible.
Bro.
I was horrible in those days. So I tried to rap. Tried to make beats in those days. I don't know. I wasn't good. So I guess like to me, DJing was like the natural thing to do. And so that's kind of like what I did. I was like, you know what? I love DJing. And so when I got into DJing, it was like around the time that everyone was switching from actual vinyl records to laptops where you could still DJ on vinyl, but using software.
And the CDJs?
Yeah, and CDJs and such. So that's kind of like, I still have vinyl records. I bought probably over 1,000 vinyl records when I first started. But then once I saw, okay, you know what? Because in those days, what people didn't realize is that to get the hot vinyl records, as a new DJ, you're not going to get it because they're saving it for the big DJs, like the Scratch, like the Ritzes, like Dr. J's, like those guys. So you're not getting it. You're maybe getting like all the leftover crumbs. So when you're trying to rock a party, you can't, you know, you're not going to like, you won't be able to properly rock it with, you know, with crumbs. But once I saw, oh yeah, you know, I can DJ on a laptop and just use MP3s.
Yeah.
Just make, and it's going to save my back and, you know, my legs and issues. And I was like, yeah, let's make the switch.
And this is like early 2000 times.
Yeah, it's like 2007, 2008.
So like even like when Napster and all that started to come into play.
Yeah.
You were already DJing at this point.
Yeah, actually, I
started, or you were just starting.
I was just starting to. I think Napster probably was already out for a few years. So probably it was like after. This is after.
Okay, so when music started becoming free.
Yeah.
What changed with the DJs? You, yourself, and what did you start noticing around?
We love hip-hop.
Listen to the sponsors, Diamond Club, with delivery all over the GTA and now all across Canada. They got the best selection of flower, edibles, and pens and all types of goodies that you need. You can find them on their Instagram page, DiamondClub_Canada, or you can find them on the 7 Days of Weed app as well as the Leafy Things app. Let them know that you heard about them through the We Love Hip Hop Network, and they may give you a discount. Big salute to Diamond Club. Yeah.
I mean, it just became easier for anyone to access, right? So anyone could DJ.
Mm.
Even like 15 years ago when I started, 15, 16 years ago, it was way easier. And then two is like that exclusiveness of having a record was kind of gone because the minute it hit the internet, everyone had it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, like it's like, for example, if you had like your like a single, you would send it out to like a few DJs, you would send out the actual vinyl.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then no one would have it. Be like, oh, like that record's fire. Be like, oh yeah, but I only have it because, you know, Friday gave it to me and he only pressed up 8 copies.
Yeah. Or the label.
Or the label. Yeah. Or like the label would send it to you. But like, you know, but once it became free, it's like anyone has it, to the point that even non-DJs are, you know, have access to the music.
Yeah.
So you'll have kids who are like, oh, play this song. You'd be like, I haven't heard it. And then you'd be like, oh damn, this song just like leaked like 5 hours ago on the internet.
Yeah.
So it's like crazy, right? And definitely I think like that changed DJing in the sense that you really have to be up to date and up on your game as like a open format DJ, you know. Mm-hmm. Or even like any other genres that you play, you have to be up, because sometimes like a record can drop like that. And you'd be like, oh, okay, damn, I have to be up on it. Or it can drop literally like 2 hours like before you have to leave for your house for a gig, and you have to be up on it.
Yeah.
If it's like a new Drake record, new Future, like new whoever.
Did you do mixtapes?
I did. Yeah. I've like done a few mixtapes, or like mix CDs, I guess, as they call it. And like, yeah, like those were fun. Like I never, like I think I did one with a couple artists.
But like the mixtapes, like for the people who don't know, right? Not to interrupt you, right? No. But for the people who don't know, like the youngins, right? Back in the early 2000s or the mid 2000s, I would say, there was like a mixtape era where like, you can go to a corner store and see DJ Andre 905 mixtape, and it had like Lloyd Banks and 50 Cent's new song and all these different artists. It was like a kind of a wild, wild west time, you know what I'm saying? Where like all this free music was going around and correct, people correct. Were kind of profiting off of it. Were you in that?
You know, actually, I was probably like one of the fools who actually gave away my CDs for free. I would never sell it.
Mm.
But I know like a few other DJs, like a lot of DJs, I should say, made money. And some of them made really good money to the point that labels got put onto it. And it was like, okay, well, how are these guys making money and these girls making money selling our music?
Yes.
And that was a big thing, right? So
that's when like DJ Drama
got raided.
Yeah. So you weren't really deep in it like that.
No, I wasn't
deep
in it at that time.
Yeah.
But like but the crazy thing is that even after that whole drama thing went down, people were still like DJs were still doing mixed CDs for at least until like the 2010s, until at least 2016, 2017, 2018. I know other DJs were still putting out CDs till maybe like just before COVID, maybe. And I think, you know, when I think DJs realize, well, we're wasting money because no one has CD players in their cars anymore.
Facts.
You know, so
even as you get into the DJing and stuff like that, you mentioned you got in with the laptops and stuff like that, right?
Correct.
So when did you start getting gigs?
Probably like a couple years after DJing. I mean, after actually like practicing and how
does, not just you, but like, I always wonder when DJs are now, I guess for lack of a better term, gigging, doing their gigs, how do you get into like getting your first one in the first place? Like people take you seriously as a DJ, like, you know, I could do this, fam. I could do the whole night, bro.
Yeah. I mean, literally it's just like about who you know and about networking and just honestly putting yourself out there, whether it's through social media or just going out to actual clubs, bars, you know, you know, shoe stores, whatever, and just say, hey, I can DJ here for free. I can, you know, at my gym here, you know, I wanna DJ for free. Just let me set up. You know, I'll bring everything. I'll set up. I'll play for free. Just, you know, see what I do. And if you like me, pay me. If not, cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as like a new DJ, you would have to do that. Either that or you hit up other more established DJs and you can ask to open for them and say, hey, you know what? I'll open for you for free. Just, you know, give me a shot.
Let me get 30 minutes.
30 minutes or half an hour, 40 minutes. So I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. So even with that, like, because you mentioned like doing gigs in like, I would call obscure places, like you go, you walk into a clothing store and all of a sudden there's a DJ in the back playing, right?
Yeah.
What was the weirdest place you ever found yourself DJing?
Weirdest place?
Where you're like, wait, how is it? Not even why, because you're going to take the money, but like, why? What am I doing DJing in here?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say stores are kind of like I've done like a bunch of random. I think like I was DJing like a soccer tournament, just I think that would be pretty random. I think the funniest was like a few years back. It's not funny, but like someone's, I guess, grandparent had died, and then they wanted a DJ to play at the like an after party as like a celebration of life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But to me, it just felt weird being there.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, if like the pay is good and the people are cool, then I'll do it. But yeah, it was just like a random thing, you know, to do. It's like DJ for someone's funeral. It was like a funeral after party or like a celebration of life after party. It was just weird, you know.
You're seeing like half of the people dancing, a couple people crying in the corner.
Crying in the corner, drinking themselves to you know, and then you have other people jamming. So
it's
definitely different.
Even with the DJing, right? Like being here in Toronto, you're there in the West End, Mississauga, and stuff like that. Were you getting a lot of your first work out there, or did you have to like make your way downtown?
It was both. Actually, I was lucky in that I was able to get into like a few spots downtown. And then along with being in Mississauga as well.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, when I first started, I felt I was more downtown than Mississauga. Now, I'm most of my gigs are generally more out west. But I mean, like I do have a few spots downtown that I'll do. But yeah, when I first started, I was actually more downtown, which is crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, as time goes on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Besides just DJing clubs and stuff, like you're also doing dance halls or different things like that too, or
yeah. So I was doing everything like weddings, corporate parties.
Mm-hmm.
How
do you get into the corporate part? To the corporate stuff.
Corporate parties, same thing. It's just kind of like knowing the right people, or like, you know, I think like as I was able to kind of become like the DJ for the Raptors 905, that kind of opened me up to more corporate opportunities, where it's like, companies would see, okay, yeah, this guy DJs for the Raptors 905, so I'm assuming he's good, so we can, you know, book him, we can trust him to DJ our night for our Christmas party or our summer party or whatever is going on. So
even with that, like, you know, you've been doing that for a while with the Raptors 905.
Yeah, since 2015, 2016. So since they
really
started,
that long, eh?
Yeah, it's been like nine seasons. I guess now it's going to be technically 10 seasons. Yeah, so it's crazy.
So wait a minute. You're not the first or the only DJ they've ever had.
Yeah. I'm the only DJ for the actual Raptors 905. Yeah, since they've been in existence.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I've been doing that like long time, like 10 plus years.
Did you like go through an application process? How did you stumble on that?
So I was just honestly all through just knowing the right people, like how it's Zing. So shout out to my guy. He used to go by DJ Doctor, but his name is Lincoln Bio. Mm-hmm. He DJs for King of the Dot and he does a bunch of other stuff. So basically at that time, he was working at the Real Sports Bar, which is owned by MLSC, which is Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they own Raptors, Leafs, TFCs, and Argos. And I had actually hit him up when I saw Raptors 905 are gonna have a team in Saga, because I'm like, you know what, I should be their DJ. They're Raptors 905, I'm Andre 905, it just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then he actually, you know what, he was super cool. He put me in touch with the head of game operations.
Okay.
And then pretty much we just emailed each other. I sent them like a bio and a mix, and then they offered me the contract for that season. And then I've been with them ever since. They keep bringing back every year. So I guess
one season
good job.
Turned into freaking 15, bro.
Yeah, literally. You know, it feels that way.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So with that now, you're doing that. Does it help? Like, obviously, actually, it starts opening you up to other gigs.
Correct.
Right? So when did you first start seeing that happen? Like, the phone starts ringing more, basically.
Yeah, I'd say, like, didn't start right away. I'd say probably like it took a couple seasons in for people to kind of, you know, really know who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think once they kind of started to, like, you know, hear my name and they saw, okay, you know what, Raptors 905, then it just makes sense to book him at our venue and to work with him. So I'd say it took probably like a couple seasons.
Yeah, yeah.
For that to happen.
One thing I noticed about you, you know a lot about the Toronto music scene.
Yeah.
Has it been recent or have you always been like very interested in like the artists that have been coming up in the scene?
I've always been interested, like since probably the early 2000s, since, you know, since like the time that Empire and like you guys were around. You know, shout out to stations like Project Bounce, because that really educated me on the Toronto scene. Because at that time, I guess the only people I really knew of was like Chocolate, Cardinal, Maestro.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know of this other scene. And then I heard of, you know, Empire, JD Era, Richie Sosa, Tona,
yeah,
all these dope, talented artists that were coming up and were hungry in like the mid 2000s. And then, you know, and then just kind of to see it progress from there. So I think it's important, because I think I always say in life, to go forward, you have to know your history.
Yes.
And you have to know like the history of the, you know, of the music that you're, you know, of the city that you're from. I think it's important. And to know about, you know, like the Cardinal and the Infinite and the Maestro, Fresh Fresh and Dream Warriors, but also to know about that era of the 2000s, because that was like a crazy time too, where it's funny, I was actually talking to someone from that era maybe like a few months back, and they were saying how you really had to be outside. So if you had problems with somebody, you're going to, 9 times out of 10, you're going to run into them anywhere.
At a show.
And I'm sure there was violence and such, but for the most part, everyone got along in those days. And for the most part, people try to keep their street issues out of the music.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like how it is now, where a lot of the kids bring that, you know, like they jump in from the streets into the music.
Yeah.
And vice versa, you know, so.
So, you know, as somebody who's been DJing for a while, and knowing about the scene, getting music submissions from artists and stuff like that, yeah. Right? And I want to talk about DJ packs at some point too.
Yeah.
What's the difference you see now to back then with the way that artists approach bringing you music? Or has that even changed at all?
I think it's changed with certain artists and some artists. I still think that in terms of the approach, a lot of times, and I'm sure you probably get the same DMs. Yo, fam, check this out. This is fire.
And they'll
send you a link to like a Spotify, and they'll be like, I can't do anything with the Spotify link or Apple Music link.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, I can maybe listen to it, but I can't play it off. I can't DJ off of that.
Yeah.
Right? But I think I think a lot of artists do understand and do get it. And like especially if I'm out and if I'm out like at like a industry event, I think a lot of artists now I'm seeing are more polite in their approach and more gentlemanly and more friendly, I'd say, than they maybe they were maybe previously, you know, in like years past. And I think now I think a lot of artists understand that, hey, you know what, like I can catch more flies with honey than I can with vinegar.
Yeah, yeah.
And just being a professional and just, you know, being able to kind of like, you know, sell themselves as like an actual business and for me to take them seriously,
yeah,
is I think like I see that more and more nowadays, actually, surprisingly. So it's actually good.
No, it's a breath of fresh air. I thought that it was getting worse, just because, you know, the whole game has become very static.
You know
what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the thing is too, it's like also hip hop music in general, and like in the scale of music, is kind of dying out for what people are listening to, right?
Mm.
And that because I think last year, I think Billboard did there wasn't like a number one hip hop album.
Not until,
or maybe until Jason.
No, Billboard in 2023, I don't think there was any.
I don't think there was any, right?
And in 2024, I think Lil Uzi Vert like broke the seal and finally went number one.
Went number one,
like
yeah, correct, right? But otherwise, like, so it's like artists have to understand that, okay, the music's dying out. I have to do different things to make myself stand out. And,
yeah.
And at the end of the day, like you have to treat yourself as a business, not just as like, yo, fam, play my song.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. You know, so it's crazy. And it actually happened to me this past weekend. Some guy came up to me. He's like, yo, fam, here's $10. Play my song. I'm like, bro.
$10?
I'm like, first of all, I'm like, I don't care about the money. But I'm like, if you are going to give money, you got to 10 times that, at least 100.
Yeah.
For a DJ to even take you even seriously. And number two, it's like, I always say, look, okay, if I'm DJing out live, I don't want to download a song on the spot. It's like different if it's someone that I know or if it's like an artist that I know, like, you know, that's established. If Drake drops a new song and I haven't downloaded it at home, but I'm at the club and I see, okay, he dropped a new song, I'm going to download it and play it right away.
Yes.
Because it's Drake.
Yeah.
But if you're just an upcoming artist, like I'll always tell them, as I, like, and how I tell everyone, here's my email. Email me the record. I'll go home. I'll listen to it. If I like it, I will play it like at my next gig. No problem. No issues.
Yeah.
You know, and like the guy got mad, but I was like, okay, like, okay, cool.
You probably have to deal with so much.
Yeah, I mean, shit, bro. Yeah, I think all DJs, I think a lot of his DJs, and I'm sure you, as like a podcaster, I'm sure you have the
yeah,
the,
but
the
I'm people. Dealing with new bullshit as a podcaster, right? Like, this is like 19 how long bullshit did you guys have been dealing with? Like, I know DJs have been getting pressed forever. Oh, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I think nowadays it's not as bad. I think from like some of the stories that even like other DJs have told me from like the 90s and 2000s, that guys would literally get pressed to the point that like they would get surrounded in their booth and like they would be given the vinyl or the CD and they'd be like, you have to play it next and you'd have to keep pulling it up, you know, like a few times.
Wow.
Yeah, I've heard stories of...
They add the insult to the injury. And keep pulling it up.
Keep pulling it up and shouting them out in the mic and everything.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It it's happened. Like, I think now maybe it still happens now. I just don't know of it. But I know in like the early 2000s, like that used to happen. It was like rough on here.
You know, low key, like I feel like sometimes we complain so much about the youth and stuff like that. Yo, they're so crazy and stuff like that. But yeah. I'm always very in defense of them because I know those times, those 2000 times.
Yeah, of course.
When mans were like in your face, pause, like where they're just like, do this or else. We're right here. They're not threatening you on friggin' Instagram or something like that.
No, it's not like on Instagram. It's like it's like real life action.
Yes.
Real life action. Where if you don't play their record, you're going to probably end up in the hospital.
Yeah.
Type thing, right? So, you know, and like I have to give credit even because a lot of even, you know, like the young kids, you know, generally that do approach. And even if they come up to me at like a Raptors 905 game, I'd be like, hey, here's my email.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, most people are cool. They'd be like, okay, cool. You know what? And I'd be like, you know, what's your IG? You know what? And I'll be like, okay, you know what? If they're cool enough, I'll like, you know what? I'll say, okay, you know what? What's your IG? Let me follow you.
Yeah.
Follow me back. Tap in there. And if they're really cool, I'll be like, you know what? Take down my phone number. Right. Otherwise, you know, I'll be like, at worst, you know what? Here's my email. Here's my IG. Tap in. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and we can talk. Not just play the song right now on the spot because I don't know how it sounds. I don't know how it finishes, how it starts. There's a break in between, you know. I don't know if it's going to work with this crowd.
It might be trash.
Maybe trash. A lot of times it can be trash.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever think that you would see Toronto have such a fan base of itself?
Big Sleuth to Steven Hot Grabba with a variety of different grabba flavors and dispensers. They got red rose grabba, that red herring grabba, and peanut butter. Hit them up on their Instagram page, Steven Hot Grabba, and use the code We Love Hip Hop and receive a discount on your order. Again, you can find them on Instagram, Steven Hot Grabba. Now let's get back to the show. Cheer.
You know what's crazy? I DJing from like the mid 2000s to now, I like I never thought I would see it. And then once you kind of saw the waves, and like you would have guys and an artist that would have like a little splurge, like, you know, I remember A Game and JD Era and even Empire, where you guys had you guys had like those flashes. But to see the overwhelming, like what you said, what you saw with Pressa and K Money, and Pangs and 3M French and certain artists and Doovie and such, like. I just didn't envision it to the point that like you could play a whole set of Toronto music, which back in the 2000s you really couldn't. If you did, you
couldn't do that, bro.
The owner would be like, okay, like, you know, you're gone. You're not coming back.
I don't know
what
these songs are next.
I don't know these songs next. The girls will look at you. They'll be like, what are you playing? But to the point now that girls are the ones asking for the records, not even guys. Yeah.
When did you start noticing it, fam? I'll tell you quick. Like doing this podcast in the beginning. I started noticing it when people were coming over to the Youngstadam and they were like playing stuff on the TV, but they would play Toronto shit. And I was like, look at this. Like they could go to the, I don't know, whoever, Lil Uzi Vert or whoever who's popping that, at that, you know, but they go pick Roadrunner or a Pressa song and then one of their own guys and then, and they know the words. And I was like, this is like 2017. I was like, there's something different going on here. Did you know that? Was it around the same time for you?
Exact same time, pretty much. I think it was right after, I remember Smoke Dog had dropped Trap House. That was like, what, 2015, 2016? And then you kind of saw Prime Boys and those guys, and like the downtown
Prime
really,
Boys, yeah.
They were really bubbling up in clubs, and then Presa was coming up, and then K-Money, I guess, had dropped a couple years, like a year or two after that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really seeing, and then with Top 5 was really bubbling. So you were really seeing to the point that like people just didn't care, and that they just wanted to hear Toronto music. They didn't care about hearing the next US artists. They didn't care about hearing dancehall or Afrobeats.
Yeah, yeah.
They wanted to hear Toronto trap, and like they wanted to hear like the drill, like the you know, like just like the real hardcore street stuff, not even like the safer stuff, you know, like, you know, so to speak, right? So
yeah,
it's like it was crazy to see.
You probably had to like start doing some shifting in your catalog, like, okay, let me start downloading some of these songs.
Yeah, you know, like I had a lot of the songs, and I was just like, man, like I love these songs, but I can only maybe play them on radio or at like a 9 to 5 game, not really. But once I saw, okay, I can play this live, and that the response was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think to this day, Griselda Blanco is still one of the biggest songs to ever come out of this country,
yes.
Hip hop wise. I would put it up there, and like, outside of obviously what Drake has done, Tory Lanez, obviously, like what they've done is crazy.
They're besides the point.
But like, I'd say I put it up there with like what Maestro was doing.
Yeah.
And what Chalk Clear when he had Let's Ride. I think like it's at that level, maybe even bigger than
I think it might be past that.
I think it's past that. Like that to this point that, to the point that people like, and when I've played it, I've seen people of all cultures, not just, you know, like black or brown, like I'm talking Chinese, I'm talking white, like Arabic, like they will sing the song, they will rap the song word for word, you know, and the second verse too, you know, so it's crazy.
Yeah. That means that this is what they're bumping in their car. Like,
yeah.
Like the other day I interviewed Roni, right? And when I left the interview, I'm driving back home, I'm driving up the road, and I'm stopped at a light, and all of a sudden I'm hearing Roni playing from man's car next to me. I had to take a little, I didn't want to take a video too much, but I had to take a little video on the sneak just so I can send it to Roni. Like, yo, what are the odds, bro? But the odds are higher now, fam.
It's high. Like, you know what? I was randomly at Dollarama like 2 weeks ago, and I heard Northside Benji blaring from someone's car, from some like a Filipino kid's car was blaring it. And I was like it's great to see, and I'm happy to see that. I'm happy to see that you know, these artists, like, they have fans, and that, you know, they can, you know, make money now. And like, I love what someone like Roni is doing, touring the country, making money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the ultimate. And they doing his own show, like sold out shows throughout the country.
Yeah,
like salute to Roni, because like that takes work.
Yeah.
And you know, and I wish more artists get that opportunity. I don't know, obviously, because of street politics and, you know, it's like certain artists, it can't work out. But I think he's an example that I think a lot of artists in Toronto should look at and see, hey, you know what? If he can do it, and like I don't want to say copy his blueprint, but
That shit, man.
But yeah, copy or see what he's done and say like, hey, you know what? I can do that. Maybe, you know, build up my fan base, build up my listeners, and then sell yourself to the point that you can do shows.
Yeah.
You know, so it's important.
I say straight up copy that shit, because what Roni is doing, he's not reinventing the wheel. He's just adding the other piece to the puzzle. If you're an artist, you can't just be secluded to having YouTube videos and streams on Spotify and stuff.
Yeah.
You have to go out there and
be,
you know, see the people, fam. You have to be on stage. Your fan base should be able to see you rocking the stage. And then you also get better at rocking stages because you're the repetition.
Correct. You're putting in your reps every time, every show, right?
Yeah.
And like, you're seeing that now with like, you know, certain other artists, right? But like with Roni, I think he just kind of gave people like a blueprint. And I think, and I hope more artists follow that and can, you know, put out their own shows. Because the thing is, people only think about Ontario, but there's so many places. Like he's in Alberta, he's in Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
He's in like the most random place. And like, not only him, I know Presa was doing shows in like Saskatchewan, Halifax, which is great, you know, like get your money. Because those places will probably pay you much more than you would be in Toronto.
That's facts.
You know, so.
What do you think about like now? Because that 2017, 2018 time when we started really seeing people loving Toronto music.
Yeah.
I feel like things have happened over the years where we're not there no more.
Correct.
right? One, what do you think is the difference between then and now? And what can we do to maybe even get that energy back?
I think a couple of things. I think one is that like a few people have unfortunately passed away, or are locked up. So that I think has kind of a lot of people that had traction and motion, unfortunately, either you die or you've been locked up. That's kind of killed a lot of the buzz.
Yeah.
Too. And I think another thing that's hurt is I think just hip hop in general is just not as popular with the young kids as it was 5-6 years ago. And now it's starting to be like I'm replaced by like EDM music and Latin music and other pop music and other genres. Afrobeats is like huge, right? So I think that's kind of starting to phase out. And I think that's kind of like what's happening. And I think for it to kind of get back to that point, I think just artists just need to make good music. Just like great music. You have to make music that's undeniable, or, you know, like undeniable. Like I know it's easier said than done, but you just have to make great music, and you have to make something that's different. That people maybe haven't heard, you know, whether it's like a different beat or like a different style or something that can make you stand out.
Different look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, Young Thug is one of the most popular rappers out there. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think he's saying anything different than any rappers said over the years.
No.
And I'm not advising that do the same things as him, but he came in wearing a dress and everybody was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Until the point where he shed the dress, and now people are just like, yo, he's one of the most prolific artists. Yeah. Oh my God. The things that he says and the way that he says it is just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're like, it's taking, like, and he's amazing. Like,
correct.
People take him seriously as an artist, but there was something so different about him when he first came in that everybody had to pay attention.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not telling everybody to go run and wear a dress.
Whatever,
it probably won't even work anymore.
It
you know
won't
what
work
I'm
anymore,
saying?
Yeah.
But like he did something so different and everybody had to pay attention to him.
Yeah, no, 100%. And like that's what you have to do, right? You have to have something that makes you stand out and unique. And then people are going to pay and then people will like, you know, play your music or they'll support it. And if they like it, they'll support it. If it's not good and if there's fluff behind it, then people know.
Yeah. Yeah. You did mention earlier, and I want to just spin back around to that quick fast about the politics stuff with playing music.
Yeah.
Right. Give me an example of you having to deal with this.
Oh yeah, it's a funny story. Well,
how does that work?
So basically it's like, okay, if you're playing, you have to be cognizant of where you're playing and what place you're DJing at. But sometimes you don't know, right? Because if you're in a venue with 300-400 people, you don't know who's in the venue, right? So for example, like this is like 2016, 2017, right when Presta had dropped Novocaine. That record was ridiculously huge at that time, right? And I remember I was playing it, I think it was like a New Year's party. And when I dropped it and the crowd just blew, like the roof, like you would have thought like the roof blew off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw some guy walking over to me and I thought he said, bring it back. So I kept bringing it back from the top, explosions, man. You know, all the sound effects, you know, everything, right? And then I guess he makes his way across the room till he finally comes up to me and he grabs me by the chest. He's like, fam, don't play that. I'm like, oh, I thought you said to bring it back.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, no, this guy's my ops and this guy did some, I don't know. He was just going up. I'm like, okay, bro, like calm down. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know. And the thing is, like, a lot of us DJs, when we're playing, we don't know who likes who doesn't like who. And sometimes, like, you have to be so cognizant of what's going on in the streets and who's like, you know, who's dissed who. And, you know, like, at that same time, too, it's like, I also have to look at it. You have to take yourself out of it as a DJ and look at it as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Say if someone dissed my dead friend or dead family member and I'm at a club and everyone's turning up to, you know, where they're like saying, oh yeah, we shot this person, blah, blah, blah. We smoked them. Like, I don't know how I would feel. So I completely understand their reaction too.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to look at it from both sides and, you know, you just have to be cognizant and just, you know, realize. But at the same time too, I always tell people, look, if it's a hot record, it's a hot record, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, whether you like it or not, right? So you just, I always tell people, look, if your ops are making hot music, make something hotter. Like make something hotter or make something better. Or you know what? Like don't get at the DJ. Because I've had this talk with so many other artists. Like for example, what's his name? Pilla B.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, super cool guy. We've had this talk. And he told me, he's like, Andre, I don't care who you play if you play my ops. because you're a DJ, you're exempt from this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, honestly, Pilla, I wish more people thought like you, because a lot of people do not think like that. And I get it too. And I understand why people are upset and frustrated, right? So, but he told me, he's like, look, I don't care if you play, you're getting paid, you have a job to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I try to rationalize with people. Like, I have a job to do, right? Because I'm sure it's same with you as like a podcaster. You interview people from all different sides of beef.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some artists were like, oh, I'm going to come on because he interviewed this. But it's like, I always think that's, you're being small and you're acting like an elementary school child. Yeah. You have to look at it as a business.
Yeah.
If you say, you know, and I always say, look, okay, if you have something hot, send it my way. Mm-hmm. Or you have my email, here's my number, hit me up anytime. I don't care. Like the lines are there. Yeah. I'm not going to just take a side and this and that. You know, like I'm not like that. Like me personally.
It's crazy that as a DJ in Toronto, and probably this happens in other places too, you have to like educate yourself on what's going on out there, or you can get your head smoked.
Yeah, because it can be, for example, you can be booked to DJ like an actual after party for these same artists, and you could play the wrong song not realizing, oh, they don't like that side. And that's happened to me where I've, like a funny story, but Banton, when he used to play on the Rappers 905, mm-hmm. Basically I played someone that I thought he was cool with and his area was cool with, but I didn't realize they weren't cool with till after.
Oh,
and
man.
Like literally it wasn't him. His friend was like going like this. And then I was like, oh, okay. Yes, yes, yes. You know, so, but you live and you learn, but yeah, I really learned from that day. Okay. You know what? If, you know, like, and it, not just him, but if I know, okay, if I'm going to DJ like a party for like a certain artist, I'm going to just look, see who they're following, mm-hmm. and make sure, okay, if they're not following these people, odds are I'm not going to play it.
Yeah. You want to go check the blogs, see if they're beefing anybody.
Yeah, if they're beefing anybody, what area they're from, you know.
Yeah.
Look up Six Sounds or one of these other sites that we know what they're doing, if there's any street politics and or on Torontology, see who's beefing who, and that's
Yeah. No, you got to be, you got to wear many hats when you're a DJ over here, man.
you do, 100%.
You know, just a couple of things before we end our conversation. I want you to emphasize on DJ packs and what those are.
Yes. So a DJ pack, it's the clean, the dirty, instrumental, a cappella version of a song, mm-hmm. of your record. And I always tell artists the clean, because you want a clean version because you want your song to be played on radio at a mm-hmm. stadium, at a sporting event, at a wedding, at a corporate. We can play it, you know, at all those specs. And the dirty version, obviously, then you can play like the actual song, but mm-hmm. the instrumental you want. So in case you can make what's called like a DJ 8-bar intro, which makes it easier to mix the record in and blend the record in, mm-hmm. rather than just drop the record. And then the acapella, in case if you don't like the beat, but you like the vocals, you can remix it and, you know, play that acapella over maybe like a Drake or like a Future record or whoever else, you know?
And you're getting these currently, right?
Yeah.
How many of these do you have to actually create for people?
Not as lot as I used to. I mean, like for a lot of people, like I've done for a lot of artists in the city, I've had to make clean radio edited packs for them to be played on at stadiums and to be played at different events. But actually nowadays, it's not as much. Maybe like one person here or there will hit me up and be like, hey, Andre, I need this done.
Yeah. Can you make me
clean? But for the most part, most artists now, they're realizing, hey, you know what? I'm already spending the money with my engineer. Might as well pay them, you know, might as well have them make me a clean. Because I think with most engineers, maybe I'm wrong, but as far as I know, most of the time when you're paying for the time to mix and master a record, they can do the clean for you.
Yes.
It's just a lot of times, a lot of, you know, them don't want to do it. But if you tell them, hey, I want this for radio, they should make you a clean version.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the artists don't know that they need that until, like, you know, there's conversations like this that happen and they're like, oh, next time I'm in the studio, I'm going to tell my engineer to do that.
But you know what's funny, Friday, is that when I'll ask them, I'll be like, okay, like, you know, I don't have time to make it clean. Can you just hit up your engineer? There's always excuses. My engineer's gone. He's gone AWOL or she's gone AWOL. They're out of the country. They're locked up. They're away on vacation. Something's happened to them. Just like I hear all the excuses all the time.
You know what it is? He told me that I'm gonna have to pay for an hour for him to do that. And I'm not trying to pay him.
Yeah, that's probably it. That's probably it.
Last thing, and you know, we'll hit the road because we're like an hour here. We've been chopping it up, man.
Okay.
As a DJ, Toronto DJ, somebody who's tapped into the scene, who do you see as the next up?
Wow, it's a tough. There's, you know, there's a few
or a few people.
Okay. I'll name a few people who I personally think are already up, or if they're all already kind of there, like Hawaii Mighty is already there. I think Roni, what he's doing right now is incredible. I think it's going to be time before he'll be touring in Europe and hopefully to the States. Like, I don't know what his legal situation is, but I can see him crossing over. Toby. Yeah. I think his music's phenomenal. You know, I think it's phenomenal. Like, I'm a big fan of him. I like there's so many people I like. I think, you know, I think like Black of the Dawn. He's someone who always, I feel, constantly evolves and constantly changes and reinvents himself. So I think Blacka, so many, like everything, Oshawn, like Pyrex, and so many people I'm fans of that I personally kind of want to see go far. I think obviously A.R. Paisley and him having a deal now, I think you're kind of going to see more things with him. Wow, there's like a lot of other people. Like I think even Moolah too. I think with Moolah, when he comes back, hopefully he can, you know, hopefully he can make a, like a sting, and he can make a bang. And obviously what Pressa and BFR, what those guys are doing, they've always been putting in work. So shout out to Bundog and what they're doing. Yeah, and actually even Big Slime too. I know Big Slime has some big things coming up too. So I could kind of, like, I know he's got some big things in the work too, so shout out to him. So yeah, you know what, just like these are some of the people I'm thinking off top. Like Tia Banks, I'm a big fan of. Nessia, I'm a fan of. There's like a lot of people, like Young Cake, I'm a fan of, like I work with. So there's like a lot of people in the city, who I think. But I think even the R&B in the city is like, I'm not sure how tapped in you are with like some of the upcoming.
I need to tap in more.
There's like some dope artists like Kenya Jade, someone I think everyone should.
Heard of her.
Yeah, she's really dope. Edmon, I don't know if you heard of her. She's like she's a Somalian artist. She was signed to Sony. I don't know if she's signed anymore. Her name is Edmon Chick. She's dope. So there's some good R&B even coming from the city. It's Omega funny. Mighty. So
Omega. Yeah, Omega's, I interviewed her maybe a few months back.
Yes.
And Kenya, what?
Kenya Jade.
Kenya Jade. I feel like I heard her name on the Joe Button podcast.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, she's right? She's super talented. Like, I'm a huge fan of her, and I think she can go places. Like, she's incredible.
Yeah, man. No, it's an education session over here. And I really appreciate you even having this conversation with me.
Thank you. Appreciate you reaching out.
We got to really get to know what's going on with you, your upbringing, and just, you know, just about the scene, man. And,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's one thing to like hear about it from a rapper's perspective. They can only really speak for themselves. But I feel like the DJ can speak for themselves and the people at the same time, because you deal with so much people.
We're like the liaison between the artists and the people.
Yeah.
A lot of times we are the liaison, right? So
not only the artists and the people, but also the people and like what's trending in the culture. Because like, there's one thing to post something on Instagram and be like, oh, this is popping because it got some traction. But if you play something and you can see the people moving, you can actually see the impact of what records are doing.
Yeah, 100%, 110%.
That's a whole different level than just seeing how many likes it got on the gram.
No, and that's it. And I think now even labels are starting to realize, oh yeah, we can hire DJs as A&Rs or executives, because they should be part of a decision-making process when like records are dropping and albums are coming out, because they know what's popping in the clubs, or they know what people are listening to.
Down to the BPM level, yeah, like BPM amount and everything like that. Like, you need to have somebody who thinks more than just, oh, I like this song.
Yeah, correct.
You know what 100%. I'm saying? Because you play songs that I'm sure you don't like, but you know the party's going to move.
Of course. I think every DJ plays, you know, some songs that they do that they're not the biggest fans of, but they know will get the party jumping.
Yeah.
100%.
What you got coming up in the near future?
Just keeping busy this summer, DJing. You can catch me every Friday at Nomads in Mississauga. I'll be all over the city come summertime, like downtown. I'll be at places like Free Play, Grace O'Malley's. I'll be there.
Okay.
A couple times a month. And then I'm also still on radio on Vibe 105 every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. I have a mix show. So if you're an upcoming artist, please hit me up.
Yes.
Professionally in the DMs or, you know. But yeah, so I'm just doing that. Have like a bunch of remixes on the way. And I've been back in like the studio making beats again, which is nice. So definitely artists hit me up as well. Like, let's work and let's, you know, like let's make some hits.
Where can they find you, man?
Just best way is Instagram, DJ Andre 905, or just Google me. You'll find my Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff.
Okay. DJ Andre 905 in the building. I really, really, like I said, enjoyed having this conversation. I feel like I learned a lot about the game as well. You know what I'm saying? And I feel that the people out there will learn a lot as well. Make sure to hit that like. Make sure to hit that subscribe button if you're not already subscribed. Big salute to the sponsors, Diamond Club. Hit them up on their Instagram page, DiamondClub_Canada, as well as Steamin' Hot Grabba. Hit them up on their Instagram page, Steamin' Hot Grabba. DJ Andre 905 in the building.
Sir, thank you.
We are off of this. Appreciate it. Thank you. Deuces.
We love hip-hop.